She woke up shivering. It was long after midnight and the stars looked damp and chilly. The air was full of the busy silence of the night, which is created by hundreds of small furry things treading very carefully in the hope of finding dinner, while avoiding being the main course. A crescent moon was setting, and a thin grey glow towards the rim of the world suggested that, against all probability, another day was on the cards. Someone had wrapped Esk in a blanket.
"I know you're awake," said the voice of Granny Weatherwax. "You could make yourself useful and light a fire. There's damn all wood in these parts."
Esk sat up and clutched at the juniper bush. She felt light enough to float away.
"Fire?"
she muttered.
"Yes, you know, pointing the finger and whoosh,"
said Granny sourly. She was sitting on a rock, trying to find a position that didn't upset her arthritis.
I don't think I can."
"You tell me," said Granny cryptically.
The old witch leaned forward and put her hand on Esk's forehead. It was like being caressed by a sock full of warm dice.
"You're running a bit of a temperature," she added. "Too much hot sun and cold ground. That's fawn parts for you."
Esk let herself slump forward until her head lay in Granny's lap, with its familiar smells of camphor, mixed herbs, and a trace of goat. Granny patted her in what she hoped was a soothing way. After a while, Esk said in a low voice, "They're not going to allow me into the university. A wizard told me. And I dreamed about it, and it was one of those true dreams, you know, like you told me, a matty thing."
"Metaphor," said Granny calmly.
"One of them."
"Did you think it would be easy?" asked Granny. "Did you think you'd walk into their gates waving your staff? Here I am, I want to be a wizard, thank you very much."
"He told me there's no women allowed in the university."
"He's wrong."
"No, I could tell he was telling the truth. You know, Granny, you can tell how..."
"Foolish child. All you could tell was that he thought he was telling the truth. The world isn't always as people see it."
"I don't understand," said Esk.
"You'll learn," said Granny. "Now tell me, this dream, they wouldn't let you into their university, right?"
"Yes, and they laughed."
"And then you tried to burn down the doors?"
Esk turned her head into Granny's lap and opened a suspicious eye.
"How did you know?"
Granny smiled, but as a lizard would smile.
"I was miles away," she said. "I was bending my mind towards you, and suddenly you seemed to be everywhere. You shone out like a beacon, so you did. As for the fire, look around."
In the half-light of dawn, the plateau was a mass of baked clay. In front of Esk, the cliff was glassy and must have flowed like tar under the onslaught. There were great gashes across it, which had dripped molten rock and slag. When Esk listened, she could hear the faint pink, pink of cooling rock.
"Ooh," she said. "Did I do that?"
"So it would appear," said Granny.
"But I was asleep. I was only dreaming."
"It's the magic," said Granny. "It's trying to find a way out. The witch magic and the wizard magic are, I don't know, sort of feeding off each other, I think."
Esk bit her lip.
"What can I do?" she asked. "I dream all sorts of things."
"Well, for a start, we're going straight to the university," decided Granny. "They must be used to apprentices not being able to control magic and having hot dreams, else the place would have burned down years ago."
She glanced towards the rim, and then down at the broomstick beside her. We will pass over the running up and down, the tightening of the broomstick's binding, the muttered curses against dwarves, the brief moments of hope as the magic flickered fitfully, the horrible black feelings as it died, the tightening of the bindings again, the running again, the sudden catching of the spell, the scrambling aboard, the yelling, the taking off. Esk clung to Granny with one hand and held her staff in the other as they frankly, pottered along a few hundred feet above the ground. And birds flew alongside them, interested in this new flying tree.
"Bagger off!"
screamed Granny, taking off her hat and flapping it.
"We're not going very fast, Granny," said Esk meekly.
"We're going quite fast enough for me."
Esk looked around. Behind them, the rim was a blaze of gold, barred with cloud.
"I think we ought to go lower, Granny," she said urgently. "You said the broomstick won't fly in sunlight."
She glanced down at the landscape below them. It looked sharp and inhospitable. It also looked expectant.
"I know what I'm doing, miss,"
snapped Granny, gripping the broomstick hard and trying to make herself as light as possible. It has already been revealed that light on the disk world travels slowly, the result of its passage through the disk's vast and ancient magical field. So dawn isn't the sudden affair that it is on other worlds. The new day doesn't erupt. It sort of sloshes gently across the sleeping landscape in the same way that the tide sneaks in across the beach, melting the sandcastles of the night. It tends to flow around mountains. If the trees are close together, it comes out of the woods, cut to ribbons and sliced with shadows. An observer on some suitable high point, let's say for the sake of argument, a wisp of cirrostratus on the edge of space, would remark on how lovingly the light spreads across the land, how it leaps forward on the plains and slows down when it encounters high ground, how beautifully it... Actually, there are some kinds of observers who, faced with all this beauty, will whine that you can't have heavy light, and certainly wouldn't be able to see it if you could. To which one can only reply, "So how come you're standing on a cloud?" So much for cynicism. But down on the disk itself, the broomstick barreled forward on the cusp of dawn, dropping ever backward in the shadow of night.
"Granny!"
Day burst upon them. Ahead of the broomstick, the rocks seemed to flash into flame as the light washed over them. Granny felt the stick lurch and stared with horrified fascination at the little scudding shadow below them. It was getting closer.
"What will happen when we hit the ground?"
"That depends if I can find some soft rocks," said Granny in a preoccupied voice.
"The broomstick's going to crash. Can't we do anything?"
"Well, I suppose we could get off."
"Granny!"
said Esk, in the exasperated and remarkably adult voice children use to berate their wayward elders.
"I don't think you quite understand. I don't want to hit the ground. It's never done anything to me."
Granny was trying to think of a suitable spell and regretting that headology didn't work on rocks. And had she detected the diamond edge to Esk's tone, perhaps she wouldn't have said,
"Tell the broomstick that, then."
And they would indeed have crashed. But she remembered in time to grab her hat and brace herself. The broomstick gave a shudder, tilted, and the landscape blurred. It was really quite a short trip, but one that Granny knew she would always remember. Generally around 3 o'clock in the morning after eating rich food. She would remember the rainbow colours that hummed in the rushing air, the horrible heavy feeling, the impression that something very big and heavy was sitting on the universe. She would remember Esk's laughter. She would remember, despite her best efforts, the way the ground sped below them, whole mountain ranges flashing past with nasty zipping noises. Most of all, she would remember catching up with the night. It appeared ahead of her, a ragged line of darkness running ahead of the remorseless morning. She stared in horrified fascination as the line became a blot, a stain, a whole continent of blackness that raced towards them. For an instant, they were poised on the crest of the dawn as it broke in silent thunder on the land. No surfer ever rode such a wave, but the broomstick broke through the broil of light and shot smoothly through into the coolness beyond. Granny let herself breathe out. Darkness took some of the terror out of the flight. It also meant that if Esk lost interest, the broomstick ought to be able to fly under its own rather rusty magic. Granny said, and cleared her bone-dry throat for a second try.
Esk.
This is fun, isn't it? I wonder how I make it happen.
Yes, fun, said Granny weakly. But can I fly the stick, please? I don't want us to go over the edge. Please.
Is it true that there's a giant waterfall all round the edge of the world and you can look down and see stars? Said Esk.
Yes. Can we slow down now?
I'd like to see it.
No. I mean, no, not now.
The broomstick slowed. The rainbow bubble around it vanished with an audible pop. Without a jolt, without so much as a shudder, Granny found herself flying at a respectable speed again. Granny had built a solid reputation on always knowing the answer to everything. Getting her to admit ignorance, even to herself, was an astonishing achievement. But the worm of curiosity was chewing at the apple of her mind.
How, she said at last, did you do that?
There was a thoughtful silence behind her. Then Esk said,
I don't know. I just needed it. And it was in my head. Like when you remember something you've forgotten.
Yes, but how?
I don't know. I just had a picture of how I wanted things to be, and I sort of went into the picture.
Granny stared into the night. She had never heard of magic like that, but it sounded awfully powerful and probably lethal. Went into the picture. Of course. All magic changed the world in some way. Wizards thought there was no other use for it. They didn't truck with the idea of leaving the world as it was and changing the people, but it sounded more literal. Needed thinking about. On the ground. For the first time in her life, Granny wondered whether there might be something important in all these books people were setting such store by these days. Although she was opposed to books on strict moral grounds, since she had heard that many of them were written by dead people, and therefore it stood to reason reading them would be as bad as necromancy. Among the many things in the infinitely varied universe with which Granny did not hold was talking to dead people, who by all accounts had enough troubles of their own. But not, she was inclined to feel, as many as her. She looked down bemusedly at the dark ground and wondered vaguely why the stars were below her. For a cardiac moment, she wondered if they had indeed flown over the edge, and then she realized that the thousands of little pinpoints below her were too yellow and flickered. Besides, who ever heard of stars arranged in such a neat pattern?
"It's very pretty," said Esk. "Is it a city?"
Granny scanned the ground wildly. If it was a city, then it was too big. But now she had time to think about it. It certainly smelled like a lot of people. The air around them reeked of incense and grain and spices and beer, but mainly the sort of smell that was caused by a high water table, thousands of people, and a robust approach to drainage. She mentally shook herself. The day was hard on their heels. She looked for an area where the torches were dim and widely spaced, reasoning that this would mean a poor district, and poor people did not object to witches, and gently pointed the broom handle downwards. She managed to get within 5 feet of the ground before dawn arrived for the second time. The gates were indeed big and black, and looked as if they were made out of solid darkness. Esk and Granny stood among the crowds that thronged the square outside the university and stared up at them. Finally, Esk said,
I can't see how people get in.
Magic, I expect, said Granny sourly. That's wizards for you. Anyone else would have bought a door knocker.
She waved her broomstick in the direction of the tall doors.
You've got to say some hocus-pocus word to get in, I shouldn't wonder, she added.
They had been in Ankh-Morpork for 3 days, and Granny was beginning to enjoy herself, much to her surprise. She had found them lodgings in the Shades, an ancient part of the city whose inhabitants were largely nocturnal and never inquired about one another's business, because curiosity not only killed the cat, but threw it in the river with weights tied to its feet. The lodgings were on the top floor, next to the well-guarded premises of a respectable dealer in stolen property, because, as Granny had heard, good fences make good neighbours. The Shades, in brief, were an abode of discredited gods and unlicensed thieves, ladies of the night and peddlers in exotic goods, alchemists of the mind and strolling mummers, in short, all the grease on civilization's axle. And yet, despite the fact that these people tend to appreciate the soft magics, there was a remarkable shortage of witches. Within hours, the news of Granny's arrival had seeped through the quarter, and a stream of people crept, sidled, or strutted towards her door, seeking potions and charms and news of the future and various personal and specialized services that witches traditionally provide for those whose lives are a little clouded or full of stormy weather. She was at first annoyed, and then embarrassed, and then flattered. Her clients had money, which was useful, but they also paid in respect, and that was rock-hard currency. In short, Granny was even wondering about the possibility of requiring slightly larger premises, with a bit of a garden, and sending for her goats. The smell might be a problem, but the goats would just have to put up with it. They had visited the sites of Ankh-Morpork, its crowded docks, its many bridges, its souks, its kasbahs, its streets lined with nothing but temples. Granny had counted the temples with a thoughtful look in her eyes. Gods are always demanding that their followers acted other than according to their true natures, and the human fallout this caused made plenty of work for witches. The terrors of civilization had so far failed to materialize, although a cutpurse had tried to make off with Granny's handbag. To the amazement of passers-by, Granny called him back, and back he came, fighting his feet, which had totally ceased to obey him. No one quite saw what happened to her eyes when she stared into his face, or heard the words she whispered into his cowering ear, but he gave back all her money, plus quite a lot of money belonging to other people, and before she let him go, had promised to have a shave, stand up straight, and be a better person for the rest of his life. By nightfall, Granny's description was circulated to all the chapter houses of the Guild of Thieves, Cutpurses, Housebreakers, and Allied Trades, with instructions to avoid her at all costs. Thieves, being largely creatures of the night themselves, know when trouble stares them in the face. The Guild of Thieves, Cutpurses, Housebreakers, and Allied Trades, a very respectable body which in fact represented the major law enforcement agency in the city. The reason for this is as follows. The Guild was given an annual quota which represented a socially acceptable level of thefts, muggings, and assassinations, and in return saw to it in very definite and final ways that unofficial crime was not only rapidly stamped out, but knifed, garrotted, dismembered, and left around the city in an assortment of paper bags as well. This was heard to be a cheap and enlightened arrangement, except by those malcontents who were actually mugged or assassinated and refused to see it as their social duty. And it enabled the city's thieves to plan decent career structure, entrance examinations, and codes of conduct similar to those adopted by the city's other professions, which, the gap not being very wide in any case, they rapidly came to resemble. Granny had also written 2 more letters to the university. There had been no reply. "I like the forest best," said Esk.
"I don't know," said Granny. "This is a bit like a forest, really. Anyway, people certainly appreciate a witch here."
"They're very friendly," Esk conceded.
You know the house down the street where that fat lady lives with all those young ladies you said were her relatives?
Mrs. Palm, said Granny cautiously. Very respectable lady.
People come to visit them all night long. I watched. I'm surprised they get any sleep.
Said Granny.
It must be a trial for the poor woman with all those daughters to feed, too. I think people could be more considerate.
Well, now, said Granny, I'm not sure that...
She was rescued by the arrival at the gates of the university of a large, brightly painted wagon. Its driver reined in the oxen a few feet from Granny and said,
Excuse me, my good woman, but would you be so kind as to move, please?
Granny stepped aside, affronted by this display of downright politeness, and particularly upset at being thought of as anyone's good woman. And the driver saw Esk. It was Treacle. He grinned like a worried snake.
I say, it's the young lady who thinks women should be wizards, isn't it?
Yes,
said Esk, ignoring a sharp kick on the ankle from Granny.
What fun! Come to join us, have you?
Yes,
said Esk. And then because something about Treacle's manner seemed to demand it, she added,
Sir, only we can't get in.
We?
Said Treacle, and then glanced at Granny.
Oh, yes, of course. This would be your aunt?
My granny. Only not really my granny, just sort of everyone's granny.
Granny gave a stiff nod.
Well, we cannot have this, said Treacle in a voice as hearty as plum pudding. My word, no. Our first lady wizard left on the doorstep, that would be a disgrace.
May I accompany you?
Granny grasped Esk firmly by the shoulder.
If it's all the same to you,
she began, but Esk twisted out of her grip and ran towards the cart.
You can really take me in, she said, her eyes shining.
Of course, I'm sure the heads of the order will be most gratified to meet you, most astonished and astounded,
he said, and gave a little laugh.
Escarina Smith, said Granny,
and then stopped. She looked at Treacle.
I don't know what is in your mind, Mr. Wizard, but I don't like it, she said. Esk, you know where we live. Be a fool if you must, but you might at least be your own fool.
She turned on her heel and strode off across the square.
What a remarkable woman, said Treacle vaguely. I see you still have your broomstick.
Capital.
He let go of the reins for a moment and made a complicated sign in the air with both hands. The big door swung back, revealing a wide courtyard surrounded by lawns. Behind them was a great rambling building, or buildings. It was hard to tell because it didn't look so much as if it had been designed as that a lot of buttresses, arches, towers, bridges, domes, cupolas and so forth had huddled together for warmth.
Is that it?
Said Esk.
It looks sort of melted.
Yes, that's it, said Treacle. Alma mater, gaudy armors, eagle tour and so on. Of course, it's a lot bigger inside than out, like an iceberg or so I'm given to understand. I've never seen the things. Unseen university, only, of course, a lot of it is unseen. Just go in the back and fetch Simon, will you?
Esk pushed aside the heavy curtains and peered into the back of the wagon. Simon was lying on a pile of rugs, reading a very large book and making notes on scraps of paper. He looked up and gave her a worried smile.
Is that you?
He said.
Yes,
said Esk with conviction.
We thought you'd left us. Everyone thought you were riding with everyone else. Then we stopped.
I sort of caught up.
I think Mr. Treacle wants you to come and look at the university.
We're here,
he said, and gave her an odd look.
You're here?
Yes.
How? Mr. Treacle invited me in. He said everyone would be astounded to meet me.
Uncertainty flashed a fin in the depths of her eyes. Was he right? Simon looked down at his book and dabbed at his running eyes with a red handkerchief.
He has these little fancies, he muttered. But he's not a bad person.
Bewildered, Esk looked down at the yellowed pages open in front of the boy. They were full of complicated red and black symbols, which in some inexplicable way were as potent and unpleasant as a ticking parcel, but which nevertheless drew the eye in the same way that a really bad accident does. One felt that one would like to know their purpose, while at the same time suspecting that if you found out, you would really prefer not to have done. Simon saw her expression and hastily shut the book.
Just the magic, he mumbled. Something
working?
Said Esk automatically.
Thank you, Odd.
It must be quite interesting reading books, said Esk.
Sort of.
Can't you read, Esk?
The astonishment in his voice stung her.
I expect so, she said defiantly. I've never tried.